If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan says when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. For Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Here we are, ready to get into Raw. If you're just hearing us for the first time now, man, you missed some golden discussion from myself and Waiting going over the Boba Fett saga in Toronto as well. Talking about the passing of Ralph Mosca. A full breakdown of Nixon Newell and Miranda Alize from Collision. Breaking it down from all angles. Wei wanted to continue, but I said, we have to move on, Wei.
Everybody has an opinion about this, all right? But ours is the best, okay?
I think there can be some stories where we could just come on and say,
this happened. Bye-bye.
I don't care. I don't care about any of this. As well, Tanahashi and Okada set for Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th. Our multiple week segment focusing on Luke Menzies. What's like, going on with Luke Menzies? Okay, that's our new segment. And the highlights of Noah's Star Navigation. Definitely an under the radar, but worth checking out event from this past weekend. We are getting into Raw as the ticket prices are going back up. And we've got 16,370 at the TD Garden. So any softness in their attendance is going to be mitigated by John Cena over this next month. And we'll continue next week at Madison Square Garden. They just ran this building in August for SmackDown. They did 12,317, according to WrestleTix. So well up and without any surprise to that. And one or two green shirts that I detected in the crowd tonight.
I think they sold a few. Yeah,
I think a few were moving here. They were all in the John Cena Celtics colors for this final trip to Boston. And man, we went all out. We got scenic shots of West Newbury, and then just the army of green here in the TD Garden. And man, there's nothing that Paul Levesque likes seeing better than green. And he is in the midst of the ring to talk about this magical time, a magical time. When there are few things that people agree on, it's like, oh, are we going to get into a political discussion here? He then called out Zoran Mamdani.
He didn't bring up Tylenol, did he?
RFK Jr. I'm sure he was going to come down here to talk about differences that people see. So he says that there are different opinions of who the greatest is, and there's all these different categories of which you can judge them. I mean, this guy just got his observer ballot in over the weekend, you could tell. And they're all subjective, but I can see it from all different perspectives as talent, promoter, businessman, and fan. Fan? When was the last time this guy bought a ticket to a show? Get out of here. A fan.
Well, I'm sure he owns every John Cena last time is now shirt. I'm sure he's got a big collection.
That's the funniest part. These guys that could afford to buy thousands of these, they would get the comp shirts at the end of the night. He says tonight everyone can agree on one thing, that from box office to leaving it in the ring, ruthless on the microphone and doing it all with a smile because he loves this business. The single greatest asset this business has ever seen. Is that going to fit onto a shirt? The single greatest asset this business has ever seen.
Might be a trench coat.
He is the one and only, the greatest of all time, John Cena. And out comes Cena. This place exploded as he came out. Cena thanks the fans. He said, my goal was to leave this business better than he found it. To leave this place.
More entertainment to their fertile ground.
That was what he was trying to convey to everybody.
Yes. Okay.
And yes, he has left this place on fertile ground. And he explains that Saturday night's main event next month will feature exhibition matches involving main roster talent against the best from NXT so that we can pave the road ahead. And he wanted to come to Boston one last time. And
so it's a WWE versus NXT, like a main roster versus NXT show.
Yeah, that's what this sounded like. I mean, yeah, for at least a couple matches. I mean, you're probably only going to have like four matches on this show tops. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's interesting. It makes sense because, I mean, NXT PLEs are also, I mean, at this point, the only other feature you're getting on Peacock, plus the archives for a few months. Yeah.
So he wanted to come to Boston one last time, and he talked about going to the Boston Garden for his first WWF show, which they censored.
What? Oh, WWF.
He said WWF and they censored it. So, yeah, first part of this, I mean, obviously, crowd was going nuts here, and he gets interrupted by Dominic Mysterio.
I mean, you know, we are getting this recap through the John Pollock filter.
And I'm not being sarcastic.
I thought it was a hell of an intro from the
back, said it like they're going nuts. I thought this was great. Like, he thinks a little
John,
of my
through
opinion.
John, it sounded like it was like, you know, like a Saturday Night Live sketch or something. But I actually thought it was a hell of an intro from Levesque. Like, I mean, very, like, felt almost like it was a Hall of Fame type of introduction. I mean, but you did it better, of course, John.
Well, I mean, Paul was number three in terms of the participants in this segment, because out comes Dominic, who might have been number one. He complains about his celebration being interrupted last week by his deadbeat father and said, I'm the one that interrupts celebrations involving old men, as he looks at Cena. And Dominic tells Cena, why don't you go stand in the corner, let the grown folk talk, and then you can speak when you're spoken to, or I'll put you down. And this crowd is just livid. And Cena explains that on this night, in this place, I am invincible. And at that point, I think Wade Barrett was there on commentary, biting his lip, remembering the Nexus at SummerSlam. And he said, if you pick a fight, you will lose. And out of respect to your father, I'm going to let you walk away. Dom says, I'm better than you ever were in your prime. I would have whooped your ass in any era. And in comes Paul, the official matchmaker now of Raw, usurping Adam Pearce, and suggests they do it right now for the Intercontinental title, as the place goes wild.
Mm, yes. Yeah, I mean, I heard about this match being planned ahead of the show. So, like, I was kind of ready for it myself. I wonder if maybe the wider audience felt that the build to it was a bit rushed. But I think it was always going to be a little bit rushed, just as just seeing how Cena had so few dates remaining.
I mean, this was like the plan for Survivor Series. So I think they've definitely just changed things around. And I would assume now you are probably getting Rey and Dom at Survivor Series, or else they wouldn't have been doing this tonight.
And what does that leave Cena with at Survivor Series?
Probably defending this title. Just you don't know against who.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's interesting. But I mean, in one segment, I thought they actually got there in a pretty like logically satisfying way.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd was just, it was incredible for, like, the first 40 minutes of the show is John Cena, because we go into the match, and Dom tries to jump him during the introduction, and gets thrown into the steps, and we got several counters to the AA by Dom. Both are down during their commercial, and then Cena powers up with shoulder blocks, proto bomb, and the five-knuckle shuffle. Dom stops another AA, sending his shoulder into the post, and he removes the turnbuckle pad, sending the ref to the corner, allowing Dom to get the chair, and he does the Eddie spot. But Cena also goes down on his back, so you're getting the whole Eddie chant on the 20th anniversary week of his passing. And Cena pops up for another AA, but in grabbing him over the shoulders, knocks the ref down with Dom's feet, applies the STF, Dom taps, and Cena immediately lets go. Rookie mistake here. And Dom goes to get the belt, Cena ducks, hits the AA, and then Ref Eddie Arango sprints down, not quite Charles Robinson speed, but close to it, and big, big near fall. Audience is losing its mind, and Dominic recovers for a 619 frog splash, but Cena just powers up into the AA, and he pins Dominic. 14 minutes, 55 seconds to become the Intercontinental Champion, and he thanks Boston because the champ is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Luckily, they had Pyro already loaded up just in case this match took place and just in case this title change would happen out of this match that was just poof out of Paul Levesque's mind.
You know, they always have it available. All right,
they're already they're prepared in Boston.
Yeah. As a match itself, I mean, it was a very house show level match, which, I mean, at this point in this man's career with only like, what, two dates left, you really can't fault. He has to stay safe and, you know.
He's got to go all out on the 13th. We're going to suicide dive. We're going to get his 450, Cena moonsault. He's doing it all on the 13th, but you better have this guy in bubble wrap before that.
But this was not, I would say, a PLE level type of performance that we've seen from Cena. But that certainly did not stop this crowd from reacting like it was a WrestleMania. They were going crazy.
They got the bonus match. They got a title change. Mm-hmm. Like, they got, I mean, this crowd was incredible. Like, these 40 minutes were just, like, they were losing their minds. More than, like, their credit card bill coming for these tickets next month.
Yeah. So for Cena at this point, this is the only championship, I guess, of the sort active championships when he was around that he didn't win. Correct?
Yeah. I mean, do they have time to make a spinner version of this to sell on WWE Shop in the next month?
I'm sure it's already up there. Yeah. But it made for a nice little moment, you know, in the crowd. And like the only maybe criticism you can point to it is, well, what does this do for like the Dominic stories that are active in play? I don't think it really interrupts it so much. I fully expect him to just win it back and or just to be able to continue to tell those stories without the championship. Like he's at a level where I wouldn't even necessarily say he needs it in order to satisfy some of those stories.
This does way more for the IC belt. Just put it on. Mm-hmm. Like you could have Cena lose it at Survivor Series. You could have this guy retire with it. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Then you do the first time is now tournament after he retires for the belt.
Oh man. Yes, of course. Yeah. It's November, which means holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds that you won't see anywhere else. Their thoughtful curation makes shopping simple. But heads up, popular gifts sell fast, so now's a great time to start crossing those names off of your list. Uncommon Goods offers high-quality, unique items, like the New York Times Custom Baseball Book, a made-to-order collection of historic newspaper pages featuring your favorite team's biggest games, star players, and memorable moments straight from the Times archives. You can even personalize it with a name for that extra special touch, perfect for that baseball fan who might still need a bit of cheering up from their team's heartbreaking World Series Game 7 loss. Uncommon Goods has something for every kind of person. Book lovers, history buffs, foodies, gardeners. Shopping there supports small makers crafting limited-run handcrafted products. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. For 15% off your next gift, head to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Wei will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. Saxton, this is the new deal on Netflix, is that they do not skip through the commercials anymore. So you're just
kind of sad about that.
Yeah, but this is, listen, they got to use these minutes.
But you got some good stuff in between commercials.
This was great. So Saxton is with LA Knight. And this was the only LA Knight we got on the show. He congratulates Cena. He's not a guy about dream matches. This is a job. Now Cena has something that I want. And if Cena is the greatest of all time, then what does that make me if I win? I don't know, but not the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So he's got a mystery opponent on SmackDown, and he... It just keeps going here, and they just fade him out, and we just cut away mid-promo.
Sorry. Yeah.
So, listen, he had a... Maybe they told him in advance, you've only got 90 seconds, and he should have just stood his ground here and demanded more time.
Doesn't work for me. Those time cues are tough to hit, man. You know all about that. You know, you used to do these sort of on cameras, and... Once you get going, talking about, like, you know, Mystery Men and all this stuff, it might be hard to, you know, really nail it at the end.
I bet he was still going during the next match. He probably just kept this promo going. Cena's congratulated in the back. The locker room meets up with him. Ray tells him that Dominic needed that ass kicking. And then at the end, he meets Cody Rhodes, who shakes Cena's hand.
Damian Priest. Was this just a little moment just because of their history? Do you think it's to lead to anything more?
I don't think there's any time for it to lead to anymore. Cody's obviously in War Games. And it was interesting. They set up nothing for Cena in New York next week beyond he showing up on the show.
Well, you might get another surprise.
Will. Like, I'm sure the idea of him wrestling is totally plausible for next week. So Priest and Rusev, the last time is now tournament. They explain that Damian Priest is partially blinded after SmackDown when Aleister Black went back to the eye.
50% vision, yeah. I believe.
Wade Barrett explains, the medical staff say he probably wouldn't be competing if it wasn't a match of such magnitude. So after all these years, we finally found out why one-eyed PCO was cleared for the Brawl for All. Because a tournament of that magnitude, they had to allow him to fight. That's the only time a medical team will, they will override their medical judgment because of a match being of too grand significance. If only, could you imagine this medical staff, if they had to deal with Tom Aspinall getting the double poke from Ciryl Gane?
No, I guess, I mean,
they would have been like, this match, too high of a magnitude to just call this one off. Tom, you got to get back out there.
Right.
Just brutal here in Boston. So Priest had to squint his eye throughout this match. This was quite the selling of an eye as Rusev went for the weakened eye. Priest fought back with kicks, did the old school off the top. Straps come down, but Rusev jabs him in the eye, and Machka kick wins in 8:51. And then in the highlight, Rusev just looks into the camera and does the you can't see me signal, but clarifies, I can see you, John. I can see you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I thought the match was fine. But both guys, especially Damian Priest, I just feel are so cold. And when you pair both of them together, it kind of resulted in a relatively, like, lukewarm match. You know, I thought the most interesting stuff here was Priest selling his eye injury through blinking. That I felt was a bit of a unique, like, it's not every day that they, I'm assuming in wrestling school, they teach, you know, you to sell like a lighting paper, fire paper to the eyes.
This should be the course management. Period one, online discourse and social media handling. Then period two, vision selling.
Vision impairment, yeah. To me, it's more of an indicator of just, I think, how uninteresting Priest has become since he's moved to SmackDown. But otherwise, it was, I actually felt like the crowd might have really kind of exhausted themselves after that first segment.
I mean, they just got 40 minutes of Cena, and it was pretty clear he's not coming back. And you kind of, like, you want to, like, obviously the beginning of the show is kind of like, that is the main event segment for all these programs now.
Especially on Netflix, when people are just tuning in and unlikely to scrub through until the end, the way that, you know, when we're two channel surfing, you might just catch the end.
But for a person in the arena, it's like, man, there's nothing on this show that's coming close to what you've given them in those first 40 minutes. I just found it amusing that Cena has structured this final show to be all about the future and these young stars getting an opportunity on this big show. And then I'm watching this tournament tonight involving all these 40-plus year olds that are all competing for this. I'm like, what of the future am I seeing here with Sheamus and Nakamura later on? So I just found that to be an interesting dichotomy.
It's a great point. Yes.
AJ and Dragon Lee meet with Adam Pearce. They are workshopping a tag team name. Dragon Lee suggests Dragons with Style. And he said this in Spanish. AJ says, "We're still working on it." Mm-hmm. And they want to defend these titles every single week. And Pearce had to basically no-sell the fact that we don't have a tag division for you guys. But I'm working on it. I'm working on it. So maybe they could make these intergender tag titles, and then there could be a team that could come in to challenge them.
I think those would be some incredible matches. Yeah, if the Kabuki Warriors could challenge them, I think that would be amazing.
Okay.
They better have a pretty damn good name plan, you know, okay? Because now the expectation is high, all right? You've already suggested like a really, really terrible name. So it has to at least be better than Los Dragones con Estilo.
How about Phenomenally Ketchup?
Yes.
So Maxine walks in next. She's got her appointment with Pierce. She has decided, "I would like to face Becky Lynch at Madison Square Garden next week." Done. And Pierce literally turns around and Becky just destroys her and leaves her laying for dead.
Not surprising that we got the match. Maybe, like, just on paper, a little surprising that we're getting as one of the build, like, I would say, like, featured matches at the MSG show, Becky Lynch versus Maxine Dupri. And that's not even a slight. Like, I feel like they've done a great job with this feud. You know, it's gotten some tremendous reactions, and Becky's done a great job, certainly. So I'm kind of expecting some decent atmosphere for this one next week.
There was no hint of the teacher, but I think this is what we're getting next week is the reveal of the teacher as AJ Lee. And I don't even completely dismiss the idea of Maxine winning this belt next week as a way to like prompt Becky to like snap, regardless of where you go with it, though. Becky and AJ ending up as the remaining slots on the women's teams.
Yeah, sure. I could see that. I also wonder if like AJ going for the championship is the more likely
it is bigger. Like you could have Maxine like loses and then it's Becky continuing to attack her afterwards, and that's when AJ reveals herself. That's probably the better play. Punk comes out. He wants to fight the broccoli headed millennial Logan Paul. So Logan comes out and explains, "I was punched in the face by the greatest boxer ever in Floyd Mayweather Jr. That was nothing compared to the tsunami I received by Bronson Reed." So this was not Bronson Reed pulling the tsunami as a mind games with Punk. No, he flattened this guy so badly that, Logan could barely come out at the end of the show, didn't he? He was like in a body cast and selling this tsunami last week. So he said that if you don't conform with the vision, you get cracked. And when I took that tsunami, it opened my eyes to a whole new vision. So Heyman comes out to join him along with Reed and Breaker. And Heyman refers to Punk as the most miserable and unlikable person I have ever met. And Punk, you betray your friendships. You're simply one rotten bastard. The most unlikable person. You could not be more unlikable unless your name was AJ Lee. Ooh. Punk challenges all five of them, stipulating that Heyman makes for two of them, and they surround the ring when Jey Uso does like some magic to just suddenly he's in the ring right next to Punk. Cody runs out, so it's the three of them fighting off the vision. And I mean, we could fast forward to this, but they meet with Adam Pearce and they call in William Regal to proclaim War Games. So we have Punk, Cody, and Jey on one side, the Vision and Logan Paul on the others, and then filling out the teams, one of which obviously this looks to be Roman's spot and one other. And I would say on the men's side, I see it being a lot more likely that it's going to be like Aleister Black just felt like that's so out of left field unless he's going to somehow be in this match. To be Cody's like opposition here. Because they do need to fill out that team.
Black. So you got the Vision with Logan Paul. Black. And who's your other guy?
Oh man, didn't we do all of this already? For the men's side, I think you'll probably get Roman and maybe LA Knight. I guess there's the off chance you could have Jimmy, but LA Knight's the bigger star for this. And then on the men's side,
I do wonder if Cena would be a candidate. Just to have him in the match, because it would be his only opportunity to be in one of these.
It's possible. Like now that the Dominic match is done, I mean, unless he's defending the IC title. The thing is, like you've got both your world champions in this match. It's just like, what else is going to make up this Survivor Series card of like other singles matches that you want to have on this card? Like
these World Games matches take a long time. Right.
They do take a long time. I just I don't imagine them doing two matches on the whole card, but maybe they'll put a Falls Count Anywhere match in between, and then that's your show.
Perhaps, yeah. It's been an. We'll talk more about this. It's a bigger problem with the women's match, but even with this men's match, I think they've done a better job than the women. Just because the Vision have been a very dominant group, but this doesn't exactly feel like the type of feud that demands a War Games organically, you know, like this moment of them calling out Regal for a War Games really is only occurring because it's in the calendar. And, because they happen to have three people, more than one person, more than two people on a particular side. So I wouldn't say that they did very well with the Sears build, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that had been, that had been something of like Levesque's booking in years past, was the idea of the opposite, that it's not just because it's that time of the year and we're going to throw this together. It was like he said this specifically with Hell in a Cell. It's that we have something that is so hot that it's ready for this match. And while they did have War Games as part of the calendar, like in the past 2-3 years, mainly like with the Bloodline in like 2022 and the following year, was the fact that you had, you know, the Bloodline and its opposition, and they built it up so much more effectively that you knew where you were going, but it also, it made sense by the time you got there that was going to be the match. This feels very, very cobbled together.
And understandably, the whole Seth Rollins thing probably threw a big wrench into it all. But on the babyface side, I just feel like they're only coming in together because of the loosest of connections. You know, we have Jay and Punk, who I guess have been friends as of 2 weeks. And Cody and Jay's longstanding relationship, but hardly feels like enough justification to go to war, you know? Like, this just feels like I'm taking up my friend's battle for him on a week's notice, which is fine if you just want to load this match with star power, but not as satisfying as a story, I feel.
I still don't get that Vision attack on Logan Paul to start the show off last week. Like, it just felt like such an odd way to get towards this.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world, no minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Stephanie Vaquer, Raquel Rodriguez for the Women's World title with Nikki Bella in the corner. So Vaquer tries for the SVP, but can't lift up Raquel. Raquel worked very well here, I thought. Big boots. The Tahana bomb gets stopped, and Raquel catches the double knees into the corner, lifting up Vaquer for a power bomb, stacking her for a two count. Perez goes to grab the leg of Vaquer, so Nikki comes, throws her into the barricade, and it's Raquel catching Vaquer for a fallaway slam, misses the corkscrew elbow, and gets hit with the devil's kiss, and Vaquer goes to the top for her corkscrew moonsault that Joe Tessitore does have a name for that I do not
Sacacorchos.
Have.
Sacacorchos.
Of course, yes.
Which means dragons with style. It means corkscrew in Spanish. So it's not that creative.
So it's the corkscrew moonsault, because Joe Tessitore called it both here.
Yeah.
10:34, Vaquer wins, and then Nikki fends off Roxanne. They hug, and then Nikki blasts her with the women's title and lays over top of Stephanie Vaquer. I always meant to butcher your goddamn name. And Nikki then rips off the red shirt to reveal the black shirt underneath to solidify the turn. She's left the Wolfpack for Hollywood.
She has, yeah. First of all, the match itself, I actually really like the concept of the match. They had Raquel basically counter every one of Stephanie's signature moves, and not just be able to counter them, but specifically to do it through size and power. So I thought like the concept of the match was really great, and I thought for the most part it was impressively pulled off. But like this many months into like what I would consider to be a bit of a resurgence of like improvement for Raquel, I still think like she still has a certain level to reach in terms of just like the intensity that I think we expect of a monster. So I hope she continues to find it. But, you know, it has been several months now. I'd even say a year. But in terms of like that sort of like confidence, I mean, you got to see the change in attitude in Nikki just in the moment of the turn. I thought it was actually very well executed. I mean, we all saw it coming, of course, but you kind of, you know, needed that time in order for it to brew. You need to even like tease the audience with the anticipation just to kind of make the moment feel bigger. And I thought they managed to achieve that by the time we got it.
Big promo next week?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty back way, right?
Right. Yes.
I hope she calls back to that. That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Good turn. I like the match. I like the turn afterwards. And I think this gets Nikki into her more suited role.
Very much so. Her much more natural role. Like, I mean, I don't know what it says about her, the fact that like everybody predicted this turn, but it, I think more so says like how unnatural she looks or how fake she looks whenever she's trying to actually like be a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought she did a great job of it. It's kind of like what you want in a subtle tease.
Did you catch the poker promo with Cody this time? So we're just going around the table, getting the innermost thoughts of all of these. Cannot wait till we get the Brock version of this. And
yeah, we forgot to mention him as a possible War Games participant.
That's true. That's true. Brock could be thrown in there. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So Cody's promo. I've sat at a lot of tables like this. Went all in a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Aha. So yes,
I get it.
They're going double or nothing in Vegas next year. Then, this is when Punk, Cody, and Jay meet with Pierce. Regal gets his once a year cameo. Nakamura and Sheamus.
He did this exact same thing on the NXT anniversary. So he got this twice this year. He got to say War Games twice, or almost got to say it.
How special. They mentioned that Sheamus has never won the Intercontinental title, and now that Cena has won the IC title, Sheamus could win this tournament and win the IC title by beating Cena. Again, all things that are not going to happen in the outcome of this.
Hey, man, you never know. Maybe Cena gets counted out by staying in the crowd for too long, and it's a shoot. Maybe Sheamus shoots on him.
Yeah, Sheamus is promoting the fact that he beat Cena for his first title on December 13th of 2009. So again, back to my point, if you don't want to like age all of these guys, maybe not bringing up these matches from 16 years ago that happened. And then they're talking about the classics that Sheamus and Cena had. I'm like, I'm sure they had fine matches, but that's a very loose interpretation of classic.
By the WWE definition of classic, would you classify any of
a
those?
Match? That got a This Is Awesome chant.
It's an old match. Okay. That's all it really needs to be a classic.
Well, was this a classic? 10 minutes and 54 seconds?
I don't know.
Well, Sheamus got the 10 beats on Nakamura. Nakamura cut off a brogue kick, and the announcers really tried to cover for this awful Sling Blade. This was as much, maybe this was Nakamura protesting the fact he didn't get the Tanahashi match by just, he's going to butcher all of Tanahashi's offense over the next month. Because this Sling Blade looked horrific. He misses a Kinshasa. Nakamura comes off the turnbuckle into a knee strike, but grabs the rope, breaking the cover. And it's a powerbomb out of the corner by Nakamura. And Sheamus gets up, bounces off the rope, and we get a brogue kick, pinning Nakamura, 10:54. And they demonstrated the code of honor afterward as Sheamus moves on, potentially to reignite those classic Cena-Sheamus showdowns. I think this will be the last match. Sheamus or Rusev? It's a toss-up.
Yeah, I guess it depends who's on the other side and whether or not they're babyface or heel, but I'm willing to bet that it's...
Can we at least get brackets in the second round once all the mysteries have been revealed? Like, at that point, we could use some... It's a 16-man tournament. Like, we have a lot of matches to go on.
I think we're only assuming the brackets because we do have matches announced, and we're assuming that maybe the two people who won will end up facing each other, right? Just in the order.
Oh, I'm not assuming that at all.
Well, anyway, yeah. But I can see them doing Rusev and Sheamus just because it's a classic rivalry, John. Okay. And
legendary.
They can have one more. But I actually thought this match went pretty well. You know, Sheamus, like, sort of being WWE's, I guess, closest ambassador of, like, their version of Strong Style, kind of brought that out of Nakamura a little bit, you know, here. So his gimmick is essentially like somebody who has good matches, and it kind of made Nakamura have a good match tonight.
Next week on the show, we go to the Tumblr, and we are going to get what I promise is going to be the greatest match in the history of Raw. Gunther against Javon Evans.
Yeah. Well, there's a young guy for you, John.
Okay. There. This guy brings the average down dramatically. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gunther too, as well. I mean, at least we got some under 40s here. I mean, Rusev is clinging to his 30s by like a month. So this should be a lot of fun. And yeah,
this would be amazing.
So we are going to get Javon Evans and Maxine Dupri at Madison Square Garden next week.
Mm.
Among the lineup. And then Solo Sikoa against, I can't reveal this. Can't give this one away. So what did we decide? Jun Kasai for LA Knight on Friday.
Yep.
I think this one will be Naito.
Solo Sikoa versus Tetsuya Naito?
Yes.
Mm. Maybe. Yeah, I could see that.
Everyone's going to expect Gardona for the Garden, right?
I think so, yeah, for a New York show. It's such a big spot for him, though. Like, do they want to give this to somebody who WWE thinks could, they could use beyond it? Like,
what if you're Matt Cardona and you get the call to face Solo Sikoa, but you're losing in 3 minutes?
Fuck it.
Do you do it?
Of course you do it.
So I think Solo's going to run through this person. That's my thought.
So you're saying, Maya World versus Solo Sikoa is the match.
100%. Yeah, that's my pick. And then the main event, Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss against the Kabuki Warriors for the tag belts. They worked over Bliss until making the tag to Flair. She comes in. She does the "you can't see me" to the audience and then hits the double moonsault onto Sane and Asuka. They try for the double natural selection, but Asuka catches Flair in the Asuka lock and Flair does the roll on top of her to escape. Sane pulls Bliss off the apron, so Flair is stuck in there, battles out of an armbar and into a lion tamer that they tried to connect as a Boston Crab to the city, but this is a full-on lion tamer from Charlotte. Big boot, figure four is applied to Asuka, and then Sane leaps off the top, but Bliss returns, grabbing her in midair into the Sister Abigail as the figure eight is locked in. Nia Jax and Lash Legend appear from the floor, breaking up the figure eight, and Bliss is thrown over the desk. They double-team Charlotte, ending with the insane elbow, and we have new champions in the Kabuki Warriors after 10 minutes and 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm. So Nia and Lash caused them to lose the titles, and they do like have a face-off with, well, they don't even have a face-off with the Kabuki Warriors afterwards.
Kind of. They all looked at each other, and then they just joined in on the attack. So your idea is that Nia and Lash don't even care about these tag belts. They're going after Flair and Bliss, and they have disarmed them of their tag belts now.
Which makes no sense whatsoever. Like, if you wanted to beat up Alexa and Charlotte anyway, why would you help them lose the championship rather than, you know, probably getting a title match very easily just by having another?
Because they know these belts mean nothing. It's just added weight in their luggage.
This match as well, I felt like was kind of lacking in atmosphere. And this is, like, you know, coming off of what I saw the crowd was capable of at the beginning of this show. The rest of the show was definitely a bit of a come down, especially this main event, where I thought the action was a lot better than I think the reaction that they were getting. And, you know, maybe it was just a tired crowd, or maybe a crowd that was mainly here to see John Cena and not much else. So Nia and Lash especially, like, this is... So, please, what did you think about the match?
I mean, I didn't think it was anywhere close to the Flair Bliss match with Bayley and Lyra from 2 weeks ago. I thought that was, and that was also in a main event slot coming after, you know, a 2+ hour show. I thought they did way better in that position. And I was looking forward to this match. I think we had talked about that they should get the belts on the Kabuki Warriors. They're the hotter act at this point. They're really, like, two of the central figures on Raw. I think it helps the tag belts. But I didn't like any of the... Like, there's no connection here with Jax and Legend. It's, like, really, you should have been grooming Lash Legend for this role beyond just snapping your fingers on Friday, and she shows up out of nowhere. There's no connection with the Kabuki Warriors. It's by the loosest of issues that they have with Flair and Bliss, and it's what you said. It's time for War Games, and therefore we all just have to section off into teams, and this one was just extremely just manufactured for that purpose at the end of this, where the beatdown continues, EO runs down, and then the final one to run out, it's the return of Rhea Ripley with a face mask and clearing the ring, including, like, this crazy razor's edge that threw Sane over the top that they caught on the floor, and Rhea taking the honors from Mr. Regal and calling for War Games, and the others, I guess, just, like, shrug and be like, I guess, sure.
Yeah, it's a very sloppily put together War Games with, like, really the loosest of reasons for these women to be paired together. And it just, again, just does not feel like a match that's earned at the end of a well-told story and really just something that's supposed to be happening here.
Like how would this scene have gone if, like, Flair and Bliss had retained these titles? Like, the scene is just like, it, none of this would have happened if things had just gone the other way.
Yeah, yeah. So a pretty disappointing build to, I would say, both companies' War Games, which just so happened to be happening, you know, within weeks of each other. But this one was like this is the rumored lineup, is it not?
Yeah, with Becky and AJ as the fifth members on each side.
Right. So it's not like they didn't have the foresight to, like, plan something more substantial beforehand. They knew Lash Legend was
and you don't have
this,
like, a curveball like a Seth. Like, you did have Rhea injuring her Rhea's nose, injury. But, like,
but they could have worked around that. I'm positive they could have worked around it. It just, by the end, it just does not feel like a very satisfying build. And I know it's tricky because of the cross brand stuff, but we just, like, there's nowhere where it feels like this should be War Games other than just the fact that it's supposed to be.
That should be the tagline. Survivor Series. It's War Games because it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
November on the Post Wrestling Cafe will include Rewind Away, looking at some of the biggest retirement matches in pro wrestling history, with selections from All Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and Stardom, among others. Plus, we'll have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322 from Madison Square Garden, and the Tanahashi Final Homecoming. John and Wei will be taking all of your questions on this month's installment of Ask Away, and John gets together with Brandon from New Jersey for a Season 4 retrospective of 90210. All that and so much more. Join now at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door. Yeah, well, Raw kind of, like, operated on a bit of this curve where I think, like, the first 40 minutes were just such a high for this crowd, and naturally so. Like, if you were to show me this on paper, that's kind of the assumption I would have, would be, like, post Cena, like, yeah, there's going to be a bit of a come down here. I like Vicar and Raquel Rodriguez, and the War Games stuff left a bit to be desired, especially on the women's side. The men's one is going to have the advantage of, you know, you have all the stars attached to it. If you have a Roman, if you have a Brock, and you've got Cody and Punk attached as well. So, I mean, they're going to be fine. You know, we have 2 weeks of build towards these War Games matches. You at least know where they're going. But yeah, the setup was not a home run.
Agree.
Well, next week they go to Madison Square Garden for what will probably be one of the biggest Raws, like gate-wise, in the history of this show. I don't think they'll beat the Intuit Dome, but this is going to be like a pretty expensive Raw next week for those that are going. So you assume we get a Cena match next
Monday.
I could, Monday.
Yeah, especially with those ticket prices. I imagine they'd want to give, you know, the people their money's worth.
And that's going to be negotiated now in these future site fees. It's like they get like booking power with these site fees. Like, we want to see this match. What would you see as the likelihood of what Cena does at Survivor Series? You think War Games is a possibility? Let's throw a War Games. Like, if he is doing a match, and I would think with this IC title, like maybe defending it. I don't know. No one like really comes to mind. There actually is a story of like a rematch with Brock, but I just don't think they want to go that direction because I don't think they want to beat Brock, and beating Cena again is not that accomplishes nothing.
Whoever it is, you would assume it's somebody who could lose to Cena, right? Unless they want to like take the IC title right off of him, and in that case, I feel like Dom should still continue the run, all right? But assuming
you could also end up like, if you get to Cena and Gunther, like there is like the chance of like Gunther just getting this belt back after beating Cena well, if you want to do that as well. Like, I think you can do whatever you want with this belt. If they want to have Cena go over at the end and retire with this belt, I think you can get away with that too. I don't think it matters at all.
Okay. Well, if you would have Cena lose the championship, who would he lose it to? Would you pin Cena?
No, I wouldn't beat him at the Survivor Series. Like, I think everything should be built up for December 13th. I'm not doing some kind of trivial loss for him. Like, it just, why even put the belt on him if you're just taking it off him at Survivor Series? I would at least keep this to the last match.
Yeah. Is there a New York name that you can think of that might be appropriate for that match?
You mean for next week MSG, or for Survivor Series?
MSG. Yeah.
For MSG. Yeah, I don't know. Like, they teased the Punk thing. That feels like something you would have wanted to set up in advance. Like, just, but I can't see them just doing that, like, for no reason. Just out of nowhere.
Give us suggestions.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he's had a lot of matches with people, like, this year. Like, who's left? Who's left that, like, people are desiring? Like, The Miz? Mm-hmm. No, he's in the tournament. So, all these other guys are all in the tournament. So, it's kind of hard to just do a match out of nowhere. Like, they can find someone. They can do it with someone. Mm-hmm. Joe Hendry. Maybe Joe Hendry next week at the Garden.
Could be.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, there you go. Those were our thoughts on Raw. We should mention what's coming up this week at Post Wrestling. We have the Poison Rana crew coming back on Tuesday. Wednesday, we will have Pollock and Thurston, followed by Rewind to Dynamite. We'll be on a little later because Blood and Guts is going till at least 10:30. And then on Thursday, it's the Ask Away Mailbag Show. So it's your chance to fill up the mailbag at forum.postwrestling.com. You have until Thursday morning to submit all of your questions, and we'll open up the mailbag, go through all of your questions. Always a fun show to go through. And the subject matter is in your hands, whatever you want us to discuss, whether it be 3-minute matches, whether it be 60-second matches with Shuji Kondo, or long matches, whatever you want to discuss and ask us about.
Yeah, it's your chance for our patrons to just ask us anything they want. And these typically are some of, I think, our best shows, just because you guys dictate the subject matter, and they're fun for us to do. So get your questions in if you're a Post Wrestling Cafe patron at forum.postwrestling.com by Thursday.
And then also coming up this weekend, we'll have a SmackDown. I'm going to do a show covering TNA Turning Point, because their 4-week exodus of live shows is over. They have a live show Thursday, live show Friday, and then Saturday I'm going to be I'll be back Sunday morning with Eric Marcotte covering UFC 322. Where do you know where they're going to be on Saturday? I didn't even realize this.
No, Boston.
They're at Madison Square Garden 2 days before Raw.
Okay.
TKO is going to make out like bandits out of New York City by this time next week. So there we go. A TKO takeover of MSG. All of that and more. You can follow along postwrestlingcafe.com. Lots coming up in the month of November. Last week, we put out our Rewind Away show covering the greatest retirement matches of all time, spanning 1983 up until Tam Nakano this past April. We're also going to have this month a 90210 Season 4 retrospective. This book is All Elite, which I'm almost done. That will be covered on Book Club later this month with Neil Flanagan. And, of course, all your regular programming, including the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 gets you in the door. The best time to sign up for the Post Wrestling Cafe was yesterday. The second best time is right now.
That is the truth.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we are heading to forum.postwrestling.com. Goodbye, YouTube.
Do you ever scroll through your camera roll and think, I should really do something with all of these?
Yeah, same. That's where Chatbooks comes in. Right now, Chatbooks is offering something we've never done before. 12 monthly mini photo books for just $12, plus free shipping.
That's a full year of printed memories for less than you pay for 1 month of streaming.
Go to chatbooks.com/get12 to claim your books now.
No stress, no frustrating software. Just pick your photos and the Chatbooks app does the rest. Printed photos have been proven to boost connection and belonging, and we think everyone deserves that. So what are you waiting for? Go to chatbooks.com/get12. That's chatbooks.com/get12 now and get 12 monthly mini photo books for $12. But hurry, this deal won't last long.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.